Well, how things have changed. I remember meeting an archdeacon at Shipston. We were church wardens, going to be new church wardens. And we said St. Nicholas had made a grant to a Hindu building in Leamington. And we were told off by the other, don't you know, he said, they worship all sorts of gods, these Hindus do. We were really told off. That was years ago. How things have changed.
Thank you. But have you, as I said, they have changed, and you have this going on in Afghanistan, Iran, so on the nose, there's so much more to change.
I just like to, I mean, I am entirely in favour of dialogue and talking to people. The one thing, one thing I do find difficult is things that, for example, our religion says, like Jesus saying, I am the way, no man comes to the Father except by me. And it wouldn't surprise me if other religions didn't have a similar sort of view that the right way to worship God was their way. How do you cope with that when, you know, people are talking, they have the same interests, they want to achieve the same results quite often, but sticking strictly to what their belief says makes difficulties?
No, it is a question. I think the deeper into faith dialogue, people clearly affirm their own conviction. It's not an attempt just to sort of pretend there aren't differences. And the many times I've found by sort of learning about other faiths, I've been able to see greater dimensions in Christianity, so a deepening of faith. And I think each religion, you know, invites that sort of commitment. If you're going to follow a path, you follow that path, rather than keep looking at the map and wondering, would it be better to go that far? You actually don't get anywhere at all. So I think you have that a deep respect. And yes, most religions will make that claim that Islam, for example, or Prophet Muhammad, this is God's final revelation. But in the conversation, sometimes you can see that some of the language perhaps was for a particular situation. Now, say, for example, with Islam, there's no, other than the people of the book who are Christians and Jews, for some respect, for them. What then about all the people of India? And I found some Muslim scholars are now taking up the verse, but no people have been without their prophet. So, I think in our different traditions, there are verses which seem to be very much emphasizing just the apartments. But also you have the Malachi, everybody's worship, true worship, the flat of the people. So, I suppose, inevitably, we are trying to build understanding, we respect our differences, we try to look for things we can do. I think in the past, very often, we concentrate on things we can love. But you're right, it's an issue which remains, I think. But I personally find that my faith is deeper, because I can respect other people's.
The older you get, the harder it gets. Because I went to a few interfaith ministry sessions in Coventry where this lady yesterday named three A's: allow, align, and accept. And at my age, I still think, you're not following the three A's fully well. Aligning, allowing, and accepting of people, not judging, etc. Which might be easier if people show the same back in equal terms, but it's very hard because we're all human. I just thought I might throw that in for anybody might be struggling in the future, because if I'm struggling with an issue to understand someone, I think about the three aims, allowing the heart, accepting other people's point of view. And when I was teaching years ago, the Islam children had to go and learn the Quran, and they were fine, got hit over the knuckles if they didn't learn it off by heart, and that's not that long ago, commentary. So practicing the three A's then is very difficult. And they can, you know, go home and speak English to the mums who aren't allowed to speak English. So I'm just throwing all that into the melting pot, although in 2012 it doesn't get any easier. I don't find it easier. I don't know anybody else does. To align, accept, and allow people to be angry.
Yes, maybe accepting doesn't, I think, mean. I think there has to be a real critical side as well. There are aspects which, if not part of true teaching, have been accepted. I mean, one thinks of this when we had a really good book, Desert. There's a flower about female mutilation, which is certainly disapproved of by the leading Muslim authorities, but will be reinforced by some local communities. And you can find these examples everywhere. And what I hope will happen is increasingly faith together can denounce the abuse of faith. And I agree, I think there's some learning by rote and so on, and some problems about discipline in these special Muslim schools. So, but other Muslim schools that I've been to, which are sort of learning and adapting to the pattern of education in this country, are much more open. And the Muslim college, I mentioned, was particularly set up to try and train imams in Britain. Because the person in charge, Jackie Badger, some people have heard of, was worried about mosques importing imams, so from Pakistan, who spoke very little English and had no awareness of the culture of this country. So they found it very difficult to communicate with young people. And I mean, one of the strange things I found about being in faith groups, which I never quite resolved, in one sense it brings people together. On the other hand, I think it makes those involved more critical of some of the abuses in religion. So, I think it's a fair point. Thank you.
John Peterson, who was some years ago secretary or senior officer of the Anglican Communion, said that as the world shrinks, or apparently shrinks, because of the increase of technology, and we've seen the effect of this in the Middle East in the Arab Spring, so human nature wants to make the boundaries around our identities even more firm. Do you think this is true? And do you think religion plays a role in this? And if it's true, what do we do about it?
Is that a question on Scottish independence?
Well, that's an interesting. I've not thought of that, but thank you.
I'm worried here. The affirming of identity has to be done over and against others. I think it is right to be rooted, and in one sense, if you have confidence in your identity, you can meet with other people. So I'm sad obviously the Bosnian Serbian situation is another, and that religion is brought in to reinforce that identity. It's a danger. I'm not sure, because it depends to some extent whether you see the outside world as a threat, or whether someone's been privileged to travel and so on. We can find that there's good things wherever you go. So it's partly that element of experience. But I was thinking back to the Black Elk, who was a distinguished Native American leader about 100 years ago. And he wrote this lovely poem, Sunset, and he'd been very concerned with the protection of his people with all the inroads of the sort of white settlers and so on. And he says poem, and he saw a group of my people, and it was beautiful. And then I saw the fruit of all the other people, and they were beautiful too. I somehow rejoiced in identity, but not use it as a sort of barrier against other. But it's very difficult to do this, but the more we can do, I think the better. But I think you're right. I mean, people do want a home. Someone would be able to. And then once at a wedding, I was asked to take. And neither of them really knew where their home was. I mean, maybe it's so much working in international organisations and travelling around. I mean, I was only asked to take the servants because one of my close friends, I knew him very well. How I worked out the band, I've forgotten.
Marcus, thank you for your address. You mentioned in passing this. Links on to what we've just been talking about. You mentioned in passing people of different faiths marrying.
Yes.
Now, I've come across quite a number of cases where when people of different faiths marry, they tend not, in the end, to follow either faith. It's so difficult. Now, of course, there are exceptions to this. Sometimes one faith in the marriage wins, and sometimes they go their separate ways on Sundays, as it were, or whatever the day is. But very often, I think, that it just becomes too difficult. And this, I think, links with what we've been talking about in the religious community. Do you think our individualism in the West is actually inimical to that maintenance of faith communities and the traditions which they hold?
I mean, I can think of interfaith marriages, which you're right, this is what's happening. I think I can think of others where sometimes a person of the strongest faith, which is family and children, would join with that. One couple is wearing a different Muslim and a Christian. I mean, it's actually very interesting now, because the Muslim then decided to take an alpha course, which he found very enriching. She's really learned quite a lot by this time. They take it seriously, but each other's religion is part of our identity. And therefore, we're really going to get to know each other. We need to marry them. So that was sort of one example. But certainly, people need a lot of preparation. The Starbucks Center in Shear, Central Park, somewhere, had a day of I'm Jewish, my partner isn't. This was very interesting, the different ways that some marriages clearly were working well, others was a problem. I mean, Christian mothers hadn't thought what they would feel about that baby son being circumcised. What we end this question of what you do about a Christmas tree. But let me just say this lovely story of one of the Georgian stories. When he was soon after he was a rabbi, he decided to go and visit some of the congregation on Christmas Day, because that would be a really good day to find them all at home. And the first visit went very well. And then the second visit, as he walked up the drive, and this other son saw him, curtains were quickly drawn, the turkey had been taken out of the kitchen, and so it worked both ways. I mean, but I think people who are going to do this need a lot of support along the country. And support from our faith communities, which of course they don't always get. And let me just add one more thing. I mean, I think that's why I first got concerned about this. I was asked to take a wedding, I was asked to take a funeral for a Christian by his Jewish widow. And she said, would I do it? Would I mind the rabbi? Rabbi couldn't make up his mind. And then he couldn't make up his mind with it. Come dressed as a rabbi or not. He didn't. When he read the prayer by John Donne, but then that was the micro point. But afterwards she said, that was wonderful. How I wish one or other of our religions could have blessed our marriage. So there's the personal tragedy, as well as the danger, and how we might need some sensitivity in our ministry. But you've got some experience of this too, you've written a book for that. But then therefore, well, you can say that next time you come.
what you said at the beginning of your talk about a lady who said you should only be talking to Muslims in order to convert them.
Yeah.
In an ideal world, is there still, should there still be a place for conversion between the faiths, or should we just forget it?
No, I mean, I think there will be people whose spiritual path requires them to find themselves more at home than an opposition. And I think certainly as a Christian, I want to witness to Christ, to all that he's meant to me, is what I understand. But in the end, it's God who converts, I think. We can witness. I don't think we can determine another person's spiritual path. And of course, we also have to, how do we minister as Christians if somebody who's a Christian decides to become a member of another tradition? So it works both ways. And Donald Nicol, who was a very fine person and wrote the book Holiness, once said, he thought it was a sign of maturity of a faith community. If it could, how it could let people go. If you go with that blessing. And of course, a number of people from perhaps Christian background have explored Buddhism, and that's been the way they've come back to that Christian faith. So I think we are to witness, and we've got plenty of people who don't need many of them to witness to as well. So, no, I think we've got to improve ourselves, and people respect me. Certainly, Buddhism is a missionary faith, and Islam is. And then there's a question of how you witness. Witnessing, I think, how affirming the good you have found, not by denouncing what may be the bad in another tradition, not pressurizing. So it's a, I think certainly belongs. But somehow in the dialogue conversation, if you feel as on the agenda that you're being trying to push into something else, then I think it can interrupt the sort of honesty and trust. That's not a clear answer, really. It seems very ambiguous. I think one said it depends on, again, the actual conversation and the situation. Well, perhaps I can, but I couldn't admit, well, I was director of the Council of Christians and Jews, so I had a parish, but I prepared two Jewish people for confirmation. So I don't think I would tell a bit too much.
Just a mark that's perhaps a bit not necessarily central, but we live in a country where church building is an established religion, it's the religion of the state, and thus it has some special protection, blasphemy laws and things like that, and perhaps some special status. Do you think that makes it particularly difficult to have an interfaith dialogue? I mean, I presume similarly in Muslim states, Islam is the state religion, similar problems can arise. But we as Christians have some sort of protection under the law that other religions don't have, for example, in this country. What do you think about that?
I think, on the whole, the Church of England is very good at using its position to encourage other faith communities to affirm their share in British life. And I think the Queen, when she spoke recently, this interfaith reception, and they made that point. And also somehow the church has been a gateway. And for example, the way college chapels and hospitals and so on have changed, maybe also a hospital chaplain will help, the Hindu patient in contact. So I must say, I remember meeting the Chaplain General of Prisons was quite determined that only Anglican chaplains could visit people. And I'm never quite sure why he wanted to claim all prisoners and live in the Church of England. But, and I think George Carey insisted that the situation must become more real. It's interesting, the chief rabbi is one of the strongest the establishment of the church, because it affirms a very sort of moral basis to politics. And of course, this links to some really rather worrying situation going from aggressive, I call it aggressive secularists. It's possible to allow for freedom of conscience concerns and so on. But talking the question about Charles, I mean, whether he can come to use his defender of faith, title of defender of faith, I don't know. What would we see? Would we want to see a coronation service in which members of our faith took part, or perhaps maybe just a present? I mean, he was once here, I think was the first archbishop to invite members of our faith to be there when he was enthroned. So, that's what I think the British way is a little by little. Not the clay, but still.
In the passage that was the background to your talk this evening, you mentioned the issue of worshipping God in spirit and in truth. One of the things that I've always found difficult is the Muslim actual denial of the fact that Jesus died on the cross, which for me is an issue of truth. Could you give some experience from your own experience of perhaps a conversation about that particular issue?
I think what I call the more scholarly and outward-looking Muslims was, I mean, the Quran, was actually intended as a sign of respect, in the sense that somebody who was a servant of God, God wouldn't allow them to suffer. And it was out of place also, I think, the fact that Islam has a different understanding of suffering and so on there, especially of the Sunni. So it's only been denied that the sonship of Jesus, of the Son of God, because of oneness of God. But there's a lovely Indian Muslim who wrote a book, City of God, which was written by a Muslim, describing the events of the trial. But there's also an Indian Muslim who wrote about this. He said, we may not agree on what actually happened, but we can see in those events the challenge of conscience. So again, we can see that Jesus died as a martyr and that he was raised to God's presence, but they don't believe in the actual resurrection. But that's a very limited view. In order to walk to what I Muslims almost attacking Christians on that ground. So, that's part of where some of the theological dialogue is helpful, because it can actually help us to move beyond what seem to be the barriers. And the group, Bishop Hobbs and Richard Harris, Christians, Jews, and Muslims, there's a lovely chapter of Muslim appreciation of Jesus, and also a Jewish one, and Christian triangle. Appreciate the good things about Prophet Muhammad. So that's part of the dialogue, which is often rather specialist, but it can help to spread a more positive attitude. But you're quite right, and this book by the power of the Prophet of Jesus in the Quran, Kenneth Craig's writing is always very good on but Christopher, you may have more to say on it. Well, I think you would know even more about this one.
But
I think there's a... What you were talking about tonight is for the people like yourself, who maybe are in a position to do something about setting up groups that can face these issues. We should do the dialogue and the speaking, and I think that's terribly important. And I would like to emphasize, as somebody who's over 80, that I think this country and most people have come a long, long way. I think back to when I was a child, growing up, we hadn't seen a black man in this anywhere in the town cycle, which was Lincoln. And therefore we had a lot of learning to do about other people and other nationalities. And what I've appreciated, because I had to do a course as I was a magistrate in how we approached people and spoke to people in court, and there's been a lot of learning going on in a different, from a different angle to the talk you've given tonight. And I think it's the help that people need in ordinary walks of life, which we're not dealing with setting up groups of interfaith. We don't live in a black community. But I think we've come a long way in our understanding of tolerance, and I hope that this is a very good thing. I say that so that other people may be feeling very much that your talk didn't have much to say to us who have to live here and really don't have the opportunity to do the things that you want to
do. Yeah, I'm going to accept that. Because obviously, I don't know from a particular position in Warren, and I don't know whether you have much of an interfaith group. But I think I tried to suggest at the beginning that this is a matter which is at all sorts of levels, and some of the examples of communities. But what I think I wanted to try to suggest is that too often the media and in other ways, we hear the negative. We hear very little about the many positive contacts that are happening. And that a great deal has happened. And obviously there's a lot of health service that need for nurses and doctors, and there's something about our culture. And that is happening in terms of living in a multi-based society. But it doesn't. It's learning about other people's customs. It's not actually necessarily grappling with or meeting people on the basis of faith. So I think that's fair.
If I can just kind of offer, I mean, I think I would agree with Sheila about, in terms of travelling a long way. I grew up in Winchester, and the first people of colour we came across at my school were people who'd been kicked out of Uganda by Idi Amin. I think locally, we do have quite an interesting situation, because we have the large Gurdwara just down the road. We have a very strong and lively Sikh community. Certainly, I mean, Leamington isn't that far away, and it also impacts upon Warwick as well. And there is certainly an interfaith group, a Leamington-Warwick interfaith group. So there are some interesting encounters and interesting situations around here. Okay, we don't have a synagogue immediately to hand, and we may not have, okay, Christopher may know this, the local seat better than I, but you know, there are some interesting encounters to be had around locally. So I think to some extent Warwick is predominantly white, but that's not to say that there aren't interesting conversations.
Just a comment. I'm the chairman of the Stratford Unaven Interfaith Forum, which is even more white than Warwick. But our members are not Sikhs and Hindus and Muslims. In fact, I wish we could have some Muslims and some Hindus. There aren't any that I can discover, at least people are willing to join us. But we have Baha'is, we have British Buddhists, converts to Buddhism, we have Christian Scientists, and Baha'is. And I can tell you, some of the things which I found most challenging come from the Christian Scientists, because they're so near to us in some ways, and it's so different to others in what they believe.
Am I right in thinking that at one stage in European history, kind of Islam was seen as almost a Christian heresy rather than a religion that was separate and on its own?
On a slightly bigger canvas, does the rise in fundamentalism, not only in the Middle East, in Islam, but also in the Christian right in America, does this create, do you see this as a cause for concern, or does it, is it a positive in the sense of affirming identity and being clear about where people are coming from?
Quite a welcome development of sort of both within the Christian Church of more conversation with some of the more fundamentalist theology about the need to relate to other religions. And yet, maybe they will not try and relate to them on the ground of shared faith, but will relate to them on the ground of common humanity. Quite a lot of work in which people of different religions come together doesn't relate to a question of actual belief and discussion about it, but to much more practical issues, say, of environment and so on. Whatever we believe, most of us would like the environment and so on. So that may be often one way of looking for some common moral issues. And often on that one will find the fundamentalist clearer and sometimes the more difficult. So that can happen. Fundamentalism there are different sorts of but some do use it as a defence of their identity as geographic.
Well, folks, can I on your behalf thank Marcus very much indeed for his time and his thinking and his speaking this evening. It's been a great joy to meet up with you and Mary again and have you here at St. Mary's, and thank you very much indeed for getting our 2012 Lent addresses off to a wonderful and stimulating start. Next week our speaker is sitting here, and so we will look forward to Christopher Lamb, who is going to talk about the role of religion in reconciliation. I look forward very much to your talk, Christopher. But on behalf of all of us here this evening, Marcus, thank you very much indeed.